It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, hopefully I didn't change anything from last time, and they said it was better last time. So, did you listen? How was it? Was it better? Oh, you never know, do you?
I seem not to notice the things other people notice. It seemed fine to me, but then someone will say that it sounded terrible, but I don't know.
All right, now the important question is, what should we have for supper?
I don't know.
See, this is how it works. We order it now, and then it won't show up until you're gone, and then you don't have... Holy crap, Big Grove is on here now.
I don't know what that is.
Big Grove is a brewery slash restaurant that originally is in Solon, and now there's one in Iowa City. And they have different menus, but they're good. They are tasty. There's a lot of people on it now. If you live in Iowa City, you should get the Chomp app. It's pretty cool. You live in Iowa City, you should get the Chomp app.
I live in Coralville.
That's close enough. It's in the same metropolitan area.
I think we've used it because there are some places that... they only deliver because of Chomp. They don't really deliver at all. They just...
and then there are also places that still don't deliver on Chomp, and I'm like, damn it. And so mostly we just avoid those, but there are exceptions. There's one exception, actually. It's Zmerik, downtown, the noodle place. We order from them off of Grubhub, even though Grubhub is the evil thing. It's like the Uber of food delivery, except Uber now does food, so. Alright, I hope this is working. The things aren't as high as... maybe they are now. There's a big difference for me in, like, the half inch to my face. That's right. A little weird. My beard's getting a little thick, though, so I worry about...
I think we've used Grubhub, too, also.
Yeah, they're kind of evil. And in fact, that's why Chomp got created, was because they were sort of pushing everybody else out of the business.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, Chomp was specifically because Grubhub was moving in. Grubhub pulled a Walmart, basically. They got everybody hooked on it. Because you can do a lot of if you weren't doing delivery before, and now you still don't have to do delivery, people just come to your store and grab it. You get a lot of business from that. But they got everybody hooked on it. They bought out the most successful one that was already going on. And then they started jacking up how much they were charging them for it. And so they were like, hey, why don't we pay somebody to, you know, handle that? And so they paid somebody to make an app, and it's magical. All right, we're going to have Indian.
So is this like Uber or... Lyft or whatever, where average people sign up and they go pick up people's food for them?
Yes. Yes. You place an order and then people, like, there's a thing out there and some driver says, oh, I'll go do it. And then they grab it and do it. Alright. What do you think my wife wants to eat from Indian food?
I think we had to use something like that once when we ordered from Hy-Vee. You know, they've got their restaurant there.
They're on the app.
Yeah, I think we wanted them to deliver it. And they said, oh, yeah, we can do that through whatever that thing is.
Chomp. Chomp. This is exciting podcasting, I know. But if I wait till after the podcast, then...
It might take forever.
Exactly. Then we'll never get our food. Hello everyone. Welcome to Tony Ordering Food Show. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that would just order food on the phone.
probably the only one.
Well, you know, you're wanting to listen to a podcast.
I guess I could, like, be saying stuff.
Well, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 391.
You know what I think?
But, I mean, I could be saying stuff.
I think you should take a shot at trying to explain what the podcast is about.
Okay.
You've heard it often enough. I feel like you should have the gist.
Wait. So I should know what the podcast is about because I've heard you talk about it enough, not because I've done 391 episodes.
Well, and you laugh at that distinction, but by what the podcast is about, I mean what I describe the podcast is about, and by the stuff that you're saying you experienced was actually what the podcast is about, and you've been here long enough to know that those two are incredibly unrelated.
Yeah, they're not really the same, but so, I'm not going to recite your same thing. I'm just going to...
All right.
You just want me to tell them what the podcast
is about? Surprise us.
Okay.
Go for it. This is experimental territory here, people. We're getting crazy.
The podcast is called Magical Talking Hat because we have a magical hat of talking.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is people write into the hat's email address. The hat has its own email address. It's not
what email address is that?
It's not my email address. It's not Tony's email address. It's the hat's email address.
It's not Scott Baio's email address.
And what is the hat's email address? The magical talking hat at gmail.com, right? Did I get it right?
I just work here.
The magical talking hat at gmail.com. That's the hat's very own email address. The hat takes the emails that you people, whoever's listening, send in. And it turns them into little note cards that manifest in the hat itself because it's magical. We don't see these cards until we draw them out randomly. And read them on the air and then talk about them for a while.
How does my laptop know I just ordered food from Chomp? That scares me.
So that's why it's a hat of talking, because it makes us talk when we pull things out of it and read them. And the things that we pull out of it come from you, the listener, magically. See how that works? I used to call it a miracle, but Tony always corrected me and said, no, it's not a miracle. It's magic. We've done 390 episodes. This is episode 391. But the thing is, a lot of times we'll talk about, you know, what we've been watching or listening to or playing, and or we'll just talk about our weeks. And at least twice, I think it's only been twice, we have not drawn a question at all. So
I think we're up to three times, because I think we had one time a long time ago, and then I think we've had two times fairly recently.
Okay, well, but we do like to draw things out of that. So you should submit something to the hat.
Yes, you.
The Magical Talking Hat.
No, to the left. Yeah, that
guy. gmail.com.
Or girl.
Or a brief question.
Sentient object.
Or comment. Anything you want to talk about, but make sure it's brief, because the hat puts them on these tiny little cards, and if you say too much...
The hat's hand cramps up.
The card gets a little confusing. So make it brief, and we draw them out randomly, so, you know, you might send something in, and it won't be... you know, weeks or months before we get to it, but we will get to it probably. I can't think of any reason why we wouldn't. Oh, except sometimes we're not here and these guys in an alternate dimension take over, but that's a whole other thing.
Also, if it violates our standards and policies, you know, hate speech, inciting speech, stuff like that.
We have standards and policies?
I don't know. That was more of a riff on what's been in the news lately.
Well,
of today, Alex Jones is officially banned permanently from Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yes, because they have finally... I don't even know what the line is they're giving. Because they finally caved to the peer pressure of everybody else. Which, don't get me wrong, they should have a goddamn long time ago. But now they're suddenly like, oh no, something new happened, and now he's violating our terms. Yeah, fuck you.
That guy's crazy.
Yes, he is. And I assume you're talking about Alex Jones and not Jack Dorsey, who runs Twitter. But either way, I agree.
Oh, no, I was talking about Alex Jones. I mean, no offense to people who are fans of his, but I think...
Much offense to people who are fans of his. He is a horrible human being who profits on the misery of others, sells absolute snake oil shit, and profligates horrible conspiracy theories, including the belief that people who lost their children in actual gun massacres are crisis actors. So fuck him, and yeah, if you're a fan of him, fuck you. Does but he really... I would be really shocked if any of you are fans of him.
So you don't think he really believes any of that stuff?
Well, he claims, sort of, not to, when he was trying to get custody of his kids. He claimed he was just an entertainer, and that's just a role that he plays. Mm. And I don't know. If he does, he's either super down the conspiracy rabbit hole or really dumb, or both. But no, I think he gets into it because it makes him money.
Mm.
Except it's going to be harder to make it money now.
So then that makes me wonder, do other people believe the stuff he says?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. They buy his shit. That's how he makes money.
Yeah, I guess.
They buy all of his crap. They constantly harass the parents of dead children.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. So, I liked your explanation for things. Could he use the word transmogrify somewhere in it?
Use the word
transmogrify. But otherwise, this is a solid explanation.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Thank you.
All right. So, how was your week?
I'm supposed to remind you that you want to talk about ice cream.
I'll get to that.
Oh.
But.
Well, I didn't want to forget. I didn't want to forget because
that's
I don't.
That's good.
Okay. Well, let's see what. We saw that Marjorie Prime thing you talked about.
Oh, you watched that? What did you think?
I have no idea why it arrived so quickly. Well.
It was on Prime Video. Why didn't you just watch it that way?
You mean like Amazon or whatever?
Yeah. Oh, you not have Amazon. You just got it through Netflix.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Okay. But before you explain it, I have to tell you a story.
Okay.
So.
I don't have to really.
It's related to this. No, because I'm sending an email to my parents, and I'm like, I think you'd like this. It's very rare I can recommend something to my parents nowadays, so that was cool.
Sure,
so I'm like, you'd like this. They're like, we put it the next thing in our queue. My mom writes back. She's like, put it the next thing in our queue. What's coming right now is the first disc of season one of Game of Thrones.
Oh.
And I'm just like, shit. I write back, and I'm like, I don't know that you want to watch that. I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do.
Yeah, right, right.
Sure, but there's a lot of stuff in it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I won't watch it for reasons that I think you would agree with. And finally, I'm just like, Sarah, my sister, ask Sarah. She watches it, and she hangs out with you guys more. Talk to her. And my mom writes back, and she's like, yeah, I didn't want to prejudice you and just get your take, but we already talked to Sarah, and she was like, no.
Oh.
And in the background was Bucho, my niece, and she's like, no. And they're like, so much violence and nudity, mom and dad, you would hate it. And I'm like, yeah, and for me it's the rape. There's a lot of rape in there.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we're not even looking at it. We're just sending it right back. We were curious because everybody thinks
talks
it's
about,
so amazing.
Yeah, right,
but,
sure.
But so yeah, so I thought that was funny. So in theory they're watching Marjorie Prime soon too. But so what did you think?
Well, I don't know if I would have noticed it was based on a play had you not said
really?
Something. Yeah.
Really?
The only thing that would have tipped me off was how it was shot, because that's...
Well, and the credits said based on it, but yeah.
But I mean, while we were watching.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing I didn't mention when we talked about this last time, dead giveaways, that the movie you're watching is based on a play. Usually you can tell by the dialogue and things, but also how they shoot it, because it's almost like they're thinking... This script and the words in it are so important, we don't want to distract you with creative camera angles or anything
like
that.
And that's a tip, because very little happens on screen in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's frequently a giveaway of a play. But they interspersed it with some great cinematography, which was nice.
Well, I think that's the reason why I still think that I wouldn't have thought.
It didn't occur to me at the time, but when I saw it on the credits, I was like, oh, of course.
Okay. Well, and sometimes that happens to me too, but I don't think I personally would have thought that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. It was disorienting. There was a certain moment where something changed in the narrative very abruptly. I wasn't thrown off by the abrupt change, but I couldn't quite figure out why there was abrupt change. Cause I presumed it was deliberate.
Trish and I talked later about when we noticed, and there are a few abrupt changes.
Yes.
And right. So it was frequently the, I noticed this one here, and I noticed this here. And...
Yeah. By the end, I think, I presumed that by the end I would probably have an idea of why they did it that way, and I guess I felt satisfied by the end that, okay, I understand this now.
And it was definitely, it wasn't a sci-fi movie.
No.
Like, they used sci-fi elements in order to be able to tell the story they wanted to tell.
That's right. That's
but the
right.
movie had nothing to do with science fiction. It wasn't even, arguably, it wasn't even a speculative fiction piece. It used that as a tool to tell a very different story.
I completely agree. That's how I felt about it, too.
Consequently, I also have a, well, and it's, I say theory. I don't mean it in the sense that, like, the filmmakers would agree with me, but just in my head, that last scene doesn't really exist. That last scene is just sort of a what if. And it's mostly because within the consistent world they have created, that scene doesn't make sense to me. But that scene really sort of brings home the point of the messaging of the movie. And so in my head, that last scene is just sort of a fantasy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I do have to say that I did have questions about, you know, the timing of the last scene and so on. So, I mean,
yeah.
What you're saying,
that last scene brings up a lot of questions that are just sort of, the movie's very thought-provoking in my opinion anyway, but it's interesting thought-provoking. That last scene brings up a lot of questions that are just sort of distracting.
Well, the thing is that if this were a play and we were watching it, a scene like that at the end wouldn't throw us off at all, because that's a very play thing to do.
Exactly.
And it is one of those things where you as the audience member aren't really supposed to take it literally necessarily, or like you said, think it happened or not happened.
Yeah.
It's just part of the story that's being told on the stage. And I do think that it was the last scene is sort of an epilogue, really.
Yeah.
Almost like a now that you've watched this, here's a little epilogue as a primer for what you're going to talk about over dinner now, or kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think it was a great, I liked that
scene.
Yeah,
I think it
but
did well for
that. If you take it at all literally, it just begs a lot of questions that are about the logistics of the setting.
Yeah.
Which isn't the point
no,
of
that's
the movie.
No. In fact, I think the last scene's kind of trying
to... Because Trish was saying, like, that last scene was weird because blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think that last scene actually happened. Like, I think they were making a point with it.
I think it was kind of a literary device, really.
And is very cool. Like, again, I like that last
scene. I thought it worked. I thought it did a... Because up until that... Actually, up until the last scene, you might not totally understand why they're doing what they're doing, what the point of the whole thing is.
There was a bringing it around
conclusion
to that scene.
Because the last scene of the film really gave you something to sort of, oh, I see, kind of deal. And you could talk about it and the implications.
Yeah. Did you like it?
The acting was really good. I didn't think the script was...
It's been a long time since I've been able to say that about... I mean, Gina Davis and Tim Robbins are incredible actors. I feel like they've been phoning it in for the last few years, and I feel like they didn't in this, and that was really cool.
Well, I was especially impressed with Tim Robbins, actually, but...
Yes.
Everyone did a good job.
I feel like Tim Robbins was taking on a new... I think, like, this is a new era for him. Like you know how you can tell, like, it's often really easy in, like, handsome leading people, and then suddenly they switch to playing the middle-aged characters. I feel like this was a leap in his life cycle of acting.
Yeah, maybe so.
It felt like this is an older, different kind of Tim Robbins than the Tim Robbins you were seeing just before this.
Well, it didn't feel like he was just playing himself. I mean,
no.
I really got, which
can happen with him.
I really got a feeling of a character that he kind of put some craft in.
Well, it's been a long time since I've seen Gina Davis seeming that conflicted, which I like.
Oh, yeah.
Because
sure.
I was going to say, it gives her something to chew on, and then I'm like, she chews on herself. But I'm like, no, that's the thing. Like, too often Gina Davis just, she's smart, and she's charismatic, and she's witty, and too often she just gets that role.
Yeah.
Sort of like the manic pixie dream girl's mom. And so I like this thing where, like, she's a genuine conflicted character.
Yeah, I guess I can say that.
Who played Marjorie? I know that face, but I can't remember the actress. And it's embarrassing. And John Hamm was remarkable. I don't want to say it was not a difficult part. Not everybody could have played that part. But a fair number of people could have played that part. It was definitely the least challenging role, I think, in the movie.
Hmm.
But he did admirably.
Yeah.
And he is such... And it may be because he's such a comedy nerd. He is... I always have an inherent comedic vibe to his performances, and he managed to leave that out of this, which I think was important.
You mean like Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, except, but no, the thing is, John Hamm is literally a comedy nerd in that back when he was trying to struggle to make it in Los Angeles and failing horribly, he was hanging out with all the comedians and going to all the clubs and stuff. Like, he loves comedy and has always loved comedy. And Mad Men was his big break, which happened to not be a comedy, but no, he's a big... And that's why you keep being like, wow, they got John Hamm for that thing? Mm. It's because he loves comedy.
Well, yeah. The reason I mentioned Alec Baldwin is because it's hard to watch dramatic things that Alec Baldwin has done in the past and take them seriously.
Yep.
I mean, at the time, they seemed fine, like Hunt for Red October or something like that, but it's like, now you watch it and you think,
well, it's... To be fair, I mean, this might be giving Alec Baldwin too much credit, but if you go back far enough to where Leslie Nielsen was a dramatic actor, it's the same problem.
Yeah, kinda.
Because their shtick is, we're playing silly very seriously.
Yeah.
And it undercuts any time you were playing serious very seriously.
I guess.
Which is why you still haven't seen BlacKkKlansman.
No.
The opening, or... near the opening, there's sort of a few different types of, but there's an opening where Alec Baldwin is playing a professor who is basically explaining why the Negro is going to take over good white Christian society and all, and he's horrible. But like, that's it. Like, he does this at the beginning, and it's clearly them filming it because he screws up a couple times and like goes back and stuff. But he never comes up again. It's just sort of a little set piece at the beginning. And I kept waiting for the joke because it's him and because the movie's kind of a comedy. And so I could wait, but there isn't one. He's just this fucked up racist dude.
Mm.
But because it's him, I was like, when do we laugh?
When's the joke? I know. That's just kind of what you think of him anymore.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I thought it was an interesting, cinematic.
It's okay if you didn't particularly like it that much. You seem to be straining not to quite say you liked it.
Well, because my feelings about it are ambiguous, like with so many things.
I was going to say, like with your feelings about almost everything.
Right. For example, my first impressions of it, right when it was over, wasn't that it was good or bad. It was like, oh, that was all right. But then I remembered how much I liked all the subtle parts of everyone's performance, because they really did do a good job.
And you're right, it's not a complex script.
Yeah.
But it's delivered very well. I mean,
well, that's
I buy the dialogue because of the performances.
I totally agree. And also because I wasn't sure. I thought that the sort of the philosophical issues that were being addressed were all that complex or sophisticated, but then I realized that it stayed with me for a long time afterwards, and I thought, okay,
I think they are interesting. That's the thing. It doesn't feel like it should be complicated, but you're also like, people don't cover this ground a lot.
I saw
shades of other films here, including that great Sarah Paulson documentary, The Stories We Tell.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's the thing. At first, this seems sort of obvious, but then you're like, nobody's ever sort of trod this territory
before. It is provocative, but it's kind of deceptively provocative because as you're watching it, there are a lot of things that sort of, at least for me, it sort of tricked me into thinking this is pretty simple, but then it's actually not.
Well, and on one level, it's just the usual kids grow up and there's strife between adult children and aging parents who are slowly losing their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ground that has been covered a lot. But this take on sort of what that means and what that means to each person and what that means as time goes on,
Well, they're
far too often it's the everybody just has to see each other as people kind of answer to
right,
things.
Right.
And that was not this at all. This is a remarkably amoral movie.
Yeah.
Nobody's the good person. Nobody's the bad person. Like, there are people you like and don't like, but as the movie comes, it changes. And there's nobody that you can be like, fuck that person for being this way. Or, I clearly like this person because they're like
sure.
this.
But also, it poses some very basic questions about human nature or what human beings are. And they're super basic. Like, your first thought might be, well, you know, that this film script wise seems like, you know, like a college freshman project or whatever. But then there's a reason why it's a basic question. It's because it is quite profound. I mean,
well, I think it's even to me, what I get out of it is less what are humans, but okay, here's what humans are. How do we live with that?
Yeah.
Because for me, like, none of these are new revelations, but it's like just the very the concept of the unreliable narrator, and that everyone is an unreliable narrator, and everyone on a certain level is aware of that fact, especially if you stop and think about it for a minute.
Sure.
But you have to live as though the truth you know is the truth, especially when it comes to your own personal perspective.
Yes, right.
Like, yeah, I don't know. And a lot of things lately have been starting to creep into this idea, but I thought this was a great... You know, Adam Ruins Everything covers a lot of shows about, you know, how what you remember and what it actually
That's
means
right.
and all
That's
that stuff.
Right.
But this is like, okay, so how do we exist as a polity? How do we exist, in this case, as a family, given that factor?
Well, sure, but also how do we exist as human beings?
Because, yes, I think it is microcosm. Yeah.
Right, I mean, I think that's, in a way, kind of the punchline of the whole thing is, you know, there's two types of categories of entity, basically, in this thing. I mean, like, as you pointed
there's
out...
There's humans and there's the AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then one has to wonder, how are we different from them?
Yes, and that's what a lot of it is bouncing off
right.
the other one. I feel like those are far too often done in isolation, and I feel like this one was done... People look at that in terms of self-identity. This movie looked at it in terms of relational identity.
Yeah. Okay, that's very good, very good.
And I say, I'm just coming to this idea, but
yeah.
I think that's because, yeah, like, Oscar Isaac... The creepy AI horror movie from a few years ago.
Oh, with the Tomb Raider gal in it.
Yeah.
The Candor. What was that called?
Shit. But that was a very good movie.
Yeah, I like
it. And that dealt with this issue, but again, it was sort of an isolate. What makes a human?
Mm-hmm.
What's the, you know, and that kind of thing. It's like, no, how?
It was a typical approach.
Yeah. And this is a little, and again, Stories We Tell was a little more focused on it because it literally was about a family dealing with things.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to see in real time sort of how these different people were dealing with it. But yeah, I thought, and yeah, it just stuck with me. Like I said, it didn't hit me emotionally, and I felt like it probably should have, but I personally didn't relate to anyone in the movie.
Yeah, me neither.
I didn't see myself, I didn't see my wife. None of that. Their family issues were clearly different than mine ever had been.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood that conceptually, and it still made me think a lot.
Yeah.
And it was very full of itself. Like, it was...
See,
that scene with the piano, and they're drinking, and they're talking about the stuff they were... the philosophy they read before.
William James.
Yeah, I was just like, oh my God.
See, for whatever reason, that didn't bother me much.
It didn't bother me. I was aware of it. I am fine with a pretentious movie. I've seen some great pretentious movies. I watch fucking French art films, and I can appreciate them, and I can still tell they're so far up their own butt. But this movie, I'm just saying, this movie clearly thought a lot of itself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was
and it was
well
a super white movie.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely that.
And I don't just mean the fact that all but one person in the movie was white. I mean, the sensibilities were very white.
And the class.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously wealthy people.
And that's such an easy way to get rid of stuff. If we had made it a poor family, I mean, aside from the issue that they might not be able to afford an AI, there would have been all other sorts of factors involved.
Right, right.
And in fact, we managed to have bilingual Hispanic live-in maid, and we still managed to avoid most of those factors, mm-hmm. which is conspicuously odd. But that wasn't the point they were going for.
Yeah, right. Yep.
But yeah, this is the thing. Like, we have to dance around things because it's the podcast. But that's the main reason why I like this movie. Is I could sit down and talk for hours about this film.
Probably. And that's always a plus about any film.
And it's a rarity these days.
Yep, it is a rarity. It seems like there were other things, but I don't really remember. Are you ready to talk about ice cream now?
Yeah. I didn't have a lot going on this week. Two things in there related I want to talk about.
Okay.
Trish Game Mastered this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We played some Necessary Evil. We played two complete adventures over the weekend.
Wow.
It wasn't that tough. There's only two of us. And that was pretty fun. She's clearly learning. We're clearly learning a new game. Steph's clearly sort of learning things. So, I mean, there are some growing pains and stuff. But we all had fun. Things happened. We got to roll dice. It was good.
Great.
I was very pleased. And I finally made some people go with me. Because we were at Sycamore Mall when we were gaming. We went to Rolly Pop Ice Cream over by the theater over there.
Oh, I guess I didn't know there was.
Yes. They finally, for like a year, they were like, new frozen yogurt shop coming here. And then it turned out into an ice cream place instead called Rolly Pop, which I didn't know anything about it. It was clearly like, they're like rolled ice cream, which I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? And the thing is, the ice cream looks like it's these weird... It does. It looks like these rolled cylindrical columns of ice cream that they stick into a cup. And I knew there was something involving, like, cold surface, because you could see them working ice cream similar to, like, had a cold stone.
Mm-hmm.
But I never knew what was going on.
Okay.
And so I found out. And it's pretty weird. So here's what happens.
Tell me what happens.
You go in there, and they have, at least at present, 10 flavors of ice cream.
Okay.
And you have to pick one. To start with. But here's the thing. There is no ice cream on that premises. At all.
How can that be?
Little more infomercial disbelief in your tone would help, but yes.
How can that be?
There we go. What happens is the flavors of ice cream are ingredients. So like, for example, the flavor I picked is described as raspberries... And Nutella.
That doesn't sound very good at all.
I like, you don't like a chocolate and fruit thing? Mm. I didn't like that. But, I mean, there were different ones. Trish had one that I think was chocolate and banana and...
I mean, I guess your thing would taste like peanut butter and jelly or something, kind of.
You know, I like chocolate and fruit. I'm a big fan of chocolate and fruit. But, I mean, they had different ones. They had a berry one that was just like strawberries and blueberries or something. But anyway, it's ingredients. And so what they do is I tell them... What flavor?
Oh, you picked those two.
No, I picked a flavor called, I think, Razzle Dazzle.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. Because they have 10 flavors. But the flavors are just short lists of ingredients.
Gotcha, I understand. Sorry.
And the ingredients are essentially like you would expect toppings normally.
Okay.
And so I picked this one, which is raspberries and Nutella.
Gotcha.
And they go up. And they have things similar to like a marble slab you'd see at Stone Cold or something like that. Except it's like a big metal pizza plate. It's a circular thing, maybe 20, 22 inches across, and metal, and is clearly very cold.
Okay.
And so what they did with mine is they scooped out some Nutella and just put a smear of it across the cold surface.
Sure.
And it froze very fast, so they took like a putty knife or whatever, and they scored it through so that it would sort of be more in pieces and more easy to break up. Then they took four raspberries, put them on there, and smooshed them.
Mm-hmm.
Then they took a cup of sweetened cream, I guess? Like the stuff you would make ice cream out of, but just liquid.
Okay.
And they poured it on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they very quickly mixed the hell out of all of this stuff together until it was roughly ice cream. And then they smeared it out over the whole surface in a roughly rectangular shape.
Okay.
And then again, using the putty knife, they scraped like they were scraping paint. And each one would create a roll of freshly created ice cream, essentially. And then they would use tongs and they would put them in the cup. And then you could have up to three toppings added to that.
So like the ice cream looked like shavings or something?
Basically, it was just made entirely of like shavings. And so it was very light because there was a lot of air going on because it was just rolled up. It was like a very thin strip of ice cream that had been rolled up. And then several of those. So it was very unusual.
Sure.
And I really enjoyed the novelty of it. And despite the fact that there were four goddamn raspberries in the whole thing, the raspberry flavor was quite present. I would probably try it again. I might even have it on occasion. Because it's very different, and I like that. It's been a while. It's like, not since Dippin' Dots, you know. What? Has it been stuff there? I don't... It's not super good quality, because, like, Cold Stone. I love Cold Stone. But you know the main reason I love Cold Stone? It doesn't have shit to do with the mix-ins. It's because their ice cream is really tasty.
Well, when I eat ice cream, I like to have, like, a lot at one time.
Yeah. And that is not this. Like, that's the thing. I'm like... There's only one size, and it seems like a big container, but I'm like, this is probably less ice cream than we think it is.
Yeah.
So that was a little weird. Not a bad price. I mean, $6.50, which it's not great, but it's not horrible. Like, you can spend more at Cold Stone. And it was just for the novelty. Is again, it's like Dippin' Dots. Like, it's just a different way to do it, and I like that factor. But it's not super good quality ice cream or anything. So I'm like, but yeah, it was very, and it's really fun to watch them make it.
Sure.
Because you don't, like, we literally were like, we don't know what's going to happen.
And there it is.
And yeah. And so that was kind of cool. And yeah, the flavors really get through because, like, Trish had the one that was some chocolate banana, and the banana, like, was really intense in there. And it was just from, like, 3 inches of sliced banana.
Wow.
But it's very good. Yeah, but not too much else going on. I'm reading a new book that has been suggested to me because I was trying to find something that was present day, small town, sort of like fantasy, maybe dark fantasy kind of stuff.
Sure.
And somebody gave me the suggestion at work. The Raven Cycle by Maggie somebody or other. The first book is called The Raven Boys. Here's the thing. You go to the site, that like the Amazon page for it, and it's like, if you look for fans of Twilight, you'll love The Raven Cycle. And I'm like, fuck. So I'm like, are you sure? And they're like, yes, it's a terrible comparison. Don't worry. So I start reading it. So far, it's not a terrible comparison to a degree in that we're dealing with, first of all, it's definitely young adult. It's a young adult series, and I was warned of that up front. And we're dealing with a young teenage girl who has, it has been prophesied that she'll kiss her true love and her true love will die. And she's known this her whole life. And now we've got these prep school boys, and there's one who's really handsome, but he's kind of aloof and he says the wrong things. And she's so infuriated with him, but we're pretty sure that's her true love. But then there's this other nicer one, but he's not, you know, and he's poor. And I'm just like, kill me now. Except it's really well written.
Oh, okay.
To the degree that I'm into it, despite the fact that every aspect of it so far is really unappealing. It's just really well written. And it's, I told my friend, I'm like, you're hanging by a thread, but you are because of the writing. I actually am enjoying reading this, even though I should not be enjoying reading this, because the writing is that good. And she's like, that's good. And she's like, and don't worry, this is not what it's about. By the time you hit the second book, romance is barely a thing, and there's four books. She's like, it's basically gone after that. She's like, don't worry. That is a small aspect to the story, and it won't stick around. And it's definitely not like Twilight in that it is written really well. And I'm still just, I mean, N.K. Jemisin was a jump back into, like, good writing and stuff, but I spent a lot of time reading stuff that was not super well written and was just compelling stories. So I'm really, I love a good wordsmith. And I'm really enjoying somebody who can craft an interesting sentence and things like that.
Yeah.
So, I will keep you updated, but that's it. All right, we still managed to fill a lot of time there, but we have time for questions, or at least one.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's like the premise of the show, for once.
Jazz has a question.
All right. Speaking of jazz, I'm still watching Supernatural, and I'm not really liking it that well at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I told you on email, like, I've worked out the drinking game for it.
Yeah.
Which is you drink every time one of the brothers says to the other brother, you think I don't know what's going on? What's really going on here? Every time. And yeah, I mean, we're in that zone of Monster of the Week episodes again. Like, we're not dealing a lot with direct plot at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's bugging me. And insofar as we have been dealing with the regular plot, it's in stuff where I'm like, this is dumb. I mean, well, it's that something terrible happened, and so quite understandably, the brothers are kind of getting blamed for it, and I'm just like, no, they had absolutely nothing to do with this. It's really dumb that people are mad at them for this. And it's not due to confusion or anything. It's due to some principles that I really fucking hate that some movies and TV shows use for things. And I'm like, no, this is dumb.
For how they decide someone should be blamed for something?
Exactly. Yeah. And why there's tension because they're mad about something. I'm like, that had nothing to do with these people.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. So that, and I think you probably know what I'm talking about. I don't want to give things away. But so, yeah, that's a little. But, oh, no, and sorry, Jazz, we will get to your question. But. And I'm not saying they're good at this, but they like their references.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the fun things about
it. I caught a long time ago, which was hilarious to me. They were looking up something, and they were like, there were sightings of this in New Haverbrook. And I'm like, New Haverbrook, that's one of the generic town names in the Simpsons monorail episode.
Oh.
He says, I've been to Brockway, New Haverbrook, Brockway, Ogdenville, and New Haverbrook. And he says, yeah, they were in New Haverbrook. And I was like, that's funny. I'm sure they're, and he's like, oh, no, and now we got sightings here in Ogdenville and Brockway. And I'm like, fuck you. And like, not a smile, not like, that's just literally, if you didn't know, it sounded perfectly normal.
I didn't know.
But I was like, and that cracked me up. But no, just recently we had the episode with Linda. I just finished watching the episode with Linda Blair.
Oh, okay.
And she plays a fairly main character in the movie or in the episode. Mm-hmm. And the end, she's in the last scene, and then the brothers leave, mm-hmm. and then say, "She looked familiar. Did she look familiar to you?" And he's like, "Yeah, I don't know why." And I'm like, "That's cute." But then fucking Dean says, I'm hungry. Are you hungry? What? Like, yeah, I could really go for some pea soup right now. And I'm like, I love you also. Fuck you. Like, that's so dumb. But, like, it was cute. And, yeah, they really like that stuff. Yeah,
they love stuff like that. And that's probably one of the reasons we kept watching, because they would just do stuff like that all the time. And it was really funny.
All right.
Anyway,
Jazz, what Jazz were you saying, Jazz? Jeez, Jazz, can't get a word out of you.
If you could change one concept or belief for all human beings, which one would have the most positive impact?
Less toes. I feel like we have too many toes. It gets in the way of things.
I would find a way to eliminate the concept, or any related one that might take its place, actually, of Satan.
Ooh. Interesting. I like that one. Because at that point, basically, then everything is about actual responsibility for one's actions.
Also, I'm of the opinion that the first real, significant, powerful empire on Earth, every other empire before it was almost a practice empire, was the Catholic Church. Somehow they managed to have a garrison in every town, even small towns, that they could man with just one guy.
Mm.
And with that control, a huge area, no empire before the Catholic Church had ever attained that kind of control and power. Having so many garrisons, first of all, but being able to man them all with just one guy if they wanted. Usually it was more than one, but that's incredible power. And I think one of the ways they were able to do that was, I think the medieval concept of the devil helped. It kind of divided and conquered in a way. It made people suspicious of one another.
And it makes you afraid of something, afraid of consequences besides the basic mundane consequences.
That's right.
Because despite what Patton Oswalt says, not everyone will stop raping for the chance to have sky cake. They have to be told that not only do you get sky cake if you don't rape anymore, but if you do rape, then you get disgusting mud cake shoved up your butt for eternity or whatever terrible thing happens.
The point being that my observation, and maybe yours too, is that in history, the threat of hell and the threat of, you know, demons and devils just wandering around the earth ready to pounce on you was far more effective in controlling people's behavior than the promise of heaven.
Yeah.
Or even the promise of guardian angels or whatever. And I think the concept of Satan made people distrust one another. I mean, obviously,
distrust themselves in some cases.
Distrust themselves. And distrust themselves first.
Yes.
And then
a constant excuse. Oh, the devil made me do it and all that jazz.
That's right.
People need to be divinely punished and all that jazz. So I like that.
I don't think the medieval church could have become so powerful or that empire that all other empires since then sort of built on could have happened without that concept of the devil and demons and not trusting yourself, not trusting your neighbors, and where the only person in town actually you could trust was the guy at that church, that priest, and somehow it worked, and it created a huge pattern of social control that's existed.
Apropos of nothing, the New York Attorney General is subpoenaing every single diocese in New York.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
They are getting to the bottom of this shit.
Well, that's overdue, probably.
Long overdue. Long overdue. And I think that speaks to your point right there.
Yeah.
Because the devil couldn't have been in those people. Because that's the thing. You can also... That's the other side. Not only does the devil make you suspect everybody else, but also the person who tells you about the devil knows because they are clean of it, and therefore you can trust them implicitly.
And that's the key to their power.
Absolutely.
So then you're moved to cover up whatever they do.
It's even easier than the I'm really smart, so you just got to believe what I say.
Yeah.
It's like, even if I sound stupid, God's on my side and clearly not on anyone else's. Therefore, you got to do what I say. Right. I like yours. I think mine is better, but I think mine is less realistic, which is weird to say. Because yours is fundamentally impossible, but I feel like mine's even more fundamentally... Because mine involves literally, like, some all-powerful entity just instilling a specific thought in everyone's head everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's harder. But if I could do this, what I would do that I think would have the most positive impact is instill in everyone, all people, the concept that everyone is of equal significance, importance, and value, including themselves. That you are just as important, but no more important, than every other person. And of no more or less value, or more or less significance. Because I believe that to be true.
I do too. I think that's
if
a good one.
Everyone really believed that, it sort of gets rid of selfishness. Sort of. Not entirely, because you can be like, I know I'm no more important than anybody else, I still want this stuff. But I think a lot of things come from it wipes out the concept of entitlement, I think.
Well,
you no longer think you deserve better than others.
It would seem that there wouldn't be much to base bullying on.
Yep.
Because a lot of people bully because they've been bullied, and they don't have any other they don't feel like they have any other option for their self-esteem.
And a lot of people do things out of a sense of superiority, and sure. a lot of people do things out of a sense of inferiority.
And usually both in cycles.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, I see where you're going with that.
But it is harder to do. I mean, yours is just a concept that we could eradicate. Maybe that's it. Maybe it sounds easier to eradicate a concept than to forcibly place a concept into it. It's sort of like the movie that I never watched, but the Invention of Lying, the Ricky Gervais movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the moment you say, we're creating a world in which nobody's ever thought of lying before. Like, it just sounds dumb. And in practice, it's dumb. It's the same thing. It's like, everybody thinks everyone is equal and always will think that, and nobody's going to be like, you know what? I might be better than these people. I might be more important. Like, that'll never come up. Like, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it... Well, but the thing is, one of the reasons why I target the concept of Satan is because I think without that, you're right. You're going to have people who think they're better than other people and so on and so forth. But I think what the concept of Satan does is it gives people a handy, far too handy a way to categorize people as inferior. Or not even not human.
Yes, yours is getting rid of a tool of exploitation. Yeah, Mine is arguably getting rid of a cause of exploitation. And also, yours is a very anarchist answer. Mine's a very socialist
That's
answer.
That's right, because what I think is that if you got rid of that, the rest would take care of itself.
And
people
can independently decide and do things for themselves because they are no longer blinded by this lie. Whereas in my version, I'm like, no, everybody will take care of everybody now because they'll realize that everybody's just important as themselves.
My result still has a bell curve where there's going to be a few jerks in it anyway, still. That's always going to be true in mine. But you're trying to get rid of the bell curve, flatten that sucker out, and put everybody on equal playing field. Which is admittedly...
Well, and people can... But, I mean, in mine, there can still be jerks as well. It'll just... I think it gets rid of a huge amount of the jerky causes. I mean, but, I'll put it this way. I believe all people are of equal value and importance, and I still do jerky things.
No. You're right. You're getting rid of the jerky causes, but you're also limiting the scope of jerkiness. Because
yeah, absolutely.
You can only be
limiting,
so much of a jerk without... Okay, I want to be more of a jerk now, but to be more of a jerk than I've just been, I have to assume this person's less than me.
Well, and I have to... No, I think it gets rid of the villains who don't believe they're villains.
Right.
Like, people will still do shitty things, but they'll be aware...
Well, they have that, to. Like, got to admit it.
A lot of rationalization goes away.
Right.
Because now it's too much... That, oh, my God. So, last night, Trish had... You guys should check it out. If you type... Hannah Gadsby into YouTube. It's like the second thing that comes up. It's an interview on The Weekly Show, which apparently is a talk show in Australia. It looks an awful lot like The Daily Show, actually. And it's a 15-minute video that's an interview with her. And they were going off again about all the stuff with Picasso. And in the special, she talks about how she doesn't like Picasso, and it mostly comes down to Picasso was an asshole, and we all try and make excuses for that.
Mm.
Like, yeah, he did these terrible things, but that was the stress of being a great artist, and now we have these wonderful paintings and all this. And it's that concept, and we do that a lot. It's why I very seldom have heroes or even role models and stuff, and if I do, it's in a very narrow lane, because... Everybody sucks in some way, and far too often, either fans of someone or someone themselves try and justify the shitty things by they do an ends justify the means thing, and I'm never okay with that. So yeah, I love this idea. It's like, oh yeah, we revere his art, even though he did some statutory rape in there, and a lot of other misogynist stuff. No.
I think another reason, the suggestion for having everybody believe that they're worthy and other people are also, is I suspect that everybody already knows that and believes it. But that's precisely why they have to have these justifications you're talking about for behaving in a manner that they don't want to.
I think a lot of people do know and believe that. I think some people, and quite a number maybe, genuinely think they are superior and of more value, and therefore...
Who aren't psychopaths?
No. I think that's very much tied in.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, that's... For starters, the super genuine racists are automatically like that. I'm not saying the people who are like casually racist, who it's like, you know, it's, well, like I am, where most of my racist thoughts and tendencies or whatever come from a discomfort with the unfamiliar, mm-hmm. or from a it takes effort for me to approach it that way, and I want to just do things the way I would knee-jerk do them, even sure. if it's a little racist. Sure. But there are lots of people who are genuinely like, no, the blacks are genuinely less intelligent than the whites, and therefore they're a waste of people and things like that, and we are more important. Mm.
Although, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to believe.
I mean, I think
that
that's
a really
psychopathic
that.
Behavior.
No,
but
that's true. It is.
Well, and it gets and belief is a tricky thing, because how people got to that belief can be very circuitous. When you talk about yeah. former like KKK members and stuff, it's I felt horrible and inferior, and then some people came along and were nice to me.
Yeah.
And once I decided that they were cool, they explained to me that my sense of inferiority only came because these other people were ruining it for
sure.
me. But that doesn't mean that once they've been indoctrinated, they don't genuinely believe that.
Yeah, but I mean, the reason things about belief, there's lots of reasons it's tricky, but one of the reasons it's tricky is because, as I've discovered in my life, because this isn't something I used to realize was a thing, was it's pretty typical, more typical than I expected, when you go out into the world and you ask people what they believe, that they're not going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Either they'll flat out lie to you, and you discover this through certain deceptions, like flat out deceptions, or you're pretty sure they think they believe this thing, but the way they behave is pretty clear they don't believe that thing, or else they'd behave differently.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes. No, I think there's a lot of people are like, I feel like I'm basically a good person kind of thing. There's a lot of that. And then there's a lot of people that you'll hear that they know they should feel a certain way. I know I should believe this, but I don't. Deep down. And so they'll tell you they do. But if you're in confidence or they're drunk, they'll be like, I know I should feel like that, but I really do feel like Asians are bad drivers.
Well, and
you know, that kind of thing.
And they'll say things sometimes that they believe, and then when you try to have a conversation with them about it, they can't elaborate on it in any way
like a person who
really believes it would do, including some racists, by the way, who say things like, oh, well, this, that, superior. Well, how do you mean? I mean, what are you basing this on? And it's very clear that they're just spouting something they heard from their in-group. They don't really know anything about it or even feel anything about it. It's just
And the answer is, yeah, the people that I trust told me this.
Yeah.
So that's...
so...
Well...
But, I mean, is that a belief? It surely is a belief because they're acting on it.
But believe whatever the Bible tells me that I believe.
That's another one.
No, sorry. I believe whatever people tells me that the Bible tell me that the Bible says.
Yeah.
Whatever people tell me that the Bible tells me, I believe.
So with things with repression and denial and people just going along with the crowd, not even reflecting on what they say they believe. When I first went out in the world in the mid-80s, I thought if I ever talked to people about beliefs, I was going to get a sincere, honest, reflective, deeply thought out answer, and that rarely happened. Although I probably spent the first decade of my life out of off the farm thinking I was getting honest answers and acting as if I was getting honest answers and wondering why people thought I was a jerk.
Oh, God, you're such a rube. You're just such a rube.
Because that's another thing. Not only are people not really going to tell you what they believe, but they'll get mad at you for treating them like they told you the truth. Like you're supposed to somehow know what they quote-unquote really mean and behave that way.
I was expecting gum and all I got was finger pain.
I mean, it's like, why tell me a lie about what you think and believe and then get mad at me when I act like you really think and believe them? So I had a lot of trouble in that first decade. And I finally figured something
out. But after then, it was smooth sailing.
It was mostly for me personally, like in my interpersonal relationships. But I still had a problem understanding a lot of things.
Yeah, you got to stop using the past tense with these things. You still have a lot of problem understanding
these
things.
That's true, I do.
That's the main reason we do this podcast at this point. Nobody's listening. We could be friends just hanging out somewhere else. But I feel like this is a weekly teachable moment for you.
Honestly, it still baffles me, to be perfectly honest. I don't know, because a lot of times what I kind of, through conversation and the way a person's acting, I kind of figure out what they really believe, and there's nothing wrong with it. They could just say that's what they believe. So, I mean, I suppose there might be some consequences to their, like their group, I suppose.
Well, sometimes it's unconscious.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, lot of times, people think they believe something and they don't. As I've said over and over, now I'm running into this thing. I have thought my entire life that I was anti-racist. And I have thought a big chunk of my life that I was feminist. And as time goes on, periodically I learn things that I'm like, huh, I felt this way. And now I realize that doesn't match up with what I think my beliefs are.
Yeah, and that's happened to me too. Sure, sure.
And you either have to go, so I should really take that. Clearly, I was wrong in that. Or, clearly, I need to adjust what I say my beliefs are.
Well, you know, part of what causes that, I think, and this is another thing I had to learn about leaving home, was status and how important status is to people.
Is a thing.
I wasn't raised with the notion of status or, well, this person's better than this person. I mean, I knew that, you know, that you should respect a police officer or the president or whatever. But, I mean, I remember specifically being told, hey, you know, the Pope, he isn't any better person than you are when it comes to, I mean, like, the Pope was used as an example.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was raised with this sense that, oh, okay, there's structurally, there's different levels and you should respect, but nobody's really better than you are. Or worse, and you're not better or worse than anybody. So that's what I was taught.
Yeah.
No, and I really thought people felt that way in the outside world. So when I
That's why I want to change this thing.
So then when I would bump into people on status issues, again, I would either come off as a jerk because I thought I was better than them, which I didn't, or something. And I had a hard time with that for a long
people
time.
People still got weirded out when I would talk to the CEO, the last CEO that we had.
Oh, yeah.
I would just talk to him and they would freak out about
like
that. And they're like, but he's the CEO. I'm like, yeah, and he's a dude, and I just talked to him. I didn't exactly say, John, you suck at this. I should take over. I mean, I respected the man, and I don't want to get fired, but he's just a guy.
So you know a little bit what I'm talking about. When
but and there are also definite places where if you did approach the CEO would be like, the hell?
Yeah.
You're a secretary. Shut up.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I got in trouble
and
with that
people
a lot.
Really forgot about it. How many people are so well. We get the trope, I'm not racist, but from a bunch of racist people who like to say they're not racist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in ever increasingly obviously racist things, but it's because they know in their head, racism is bad. I don't like racism, but I have this belief. I'm not bad, so clearly this belief is not racism.
That's right. Again, to me, that's a status thing. It's like, if I were a racist, my status would be less.
Oh, yeah, no, because I'd be bad.
Yeah, right.
I'm opposed to racism.
Right, right, right.
Therefore, the things I believe are not racist.
But if they weren't thinking in those terms, they might be able to take a more nuanced approach to their own
and
personality.
If I approach people and I say, everybody's a little bit racist, and the key is to, those thoughts come from various places, and the key is to acknowledge those thoughts as your problem, not okay to put in society, and to try and work your darndest to make sure those actions don't impact. A lot of people who otherwise would be like, I'm not racist, they'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I have that too. that's not how they think about it. A lot of them would still be like, no, dude, I'm just not racist. Because they don't want to be racist.
It probably gets back to that thing you were saying before about people not feeling very good about themselves, which is why you brought it up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because that is a source for a lot of people being defensive about their weaknesses.
Yeah. And especially if it's something that you are proud of. If you're like, I'm very proud that I'm a good Christian. And somebody's like, you know, this seems a weird thing for a Christian to do. They'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah, but again, if that's a status thing. My status as a Christian makes me proud.
Or my status as a open-minded person. That's one I get sometimes with my parents. My parents consider themselves very open-minded. And they are in certain ways. In other ways, they are not. And they get defensive if you try and sort of show that point. And a lot of people do. And I think I do. If it's something, because there are things that I'm like, I know I could grow and learn. But there's certain things that, whether actively or consciously or not, I'm like, no, I've got to, I'm very much this positive thing. And if somebody tries to point out, you know, maybe you're not, I get defensive. I try not to, but it happens. We are over time and the food's on the way and I'm getting hungry.
Okay.
So we should end this. So if you thought we ended it too soon, why are you so defensive? go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us what you would change to fix society. And if it's us, good on you. Also, you should watch Marjorie Prime, and then we'll all talk about it in a spoilerific forum post, or not forum post, but blog post. Also, you should listen again next week. And in the meantime, don't be racist.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.